Let the party begin here in West Lafayette.
One of the top five places to watch a college basketball game.
I would argue you can't find a better one.
Three on the way. Bullseye!
I feel the electricity in the house. The passion.
It's a wall of sound. Here and back.
It is Paul McCray. They got a wall of vacuum.
Planted for three.
This is the Boiler Ball Podcast.
Welcome to the Purdue Basketball Podcast. I'm Elliot Bloom, joined by the voice of the Boilermakers, Rob Blackman. Episode 97 here on the podcast as we march towards 100 and continue on our series here with our current seniors. And today we welcome in Mason Gillis to the podcast. So Mason, welcome to the Boiler Ball Podcast.
Thank you guys for having me. Happy to be here.
So as we tape this, we're kind of marching down the stretch of the season. Don't know when this will air, but a very successful senior season. You've been a part of a lot of really good teams here, really good success. So we were talking to Morty the last podcast about just all the things that you guys have accomplished since you've set foot on campus. Do you ever think about that? That as you talk to maybe friends or guys you went to high school with or guys that you grew up playing with and you look around, like, it kind of feels good to do a lot of winning compared to maybe some of your peers.
Absolutely. We do talk about it. Whenever I go back home and I'm with my guys that I've grown up, it's nice to have conversations with them because I don't get to talk to them on a daily basis just because of life, but they do have like interesting questions about what we do up here, how we go about it, like what's the kind of day-to-day. And I just try to tell them, like, it's very simple. Honestly, we come in, get our work in, and we enjoy it, have fun with it. But like the winning aspect of it, you know, not many cultures, many programs do what we have done in the past 5 years here. And I think it's just a culmination of everybody putting their minds together. Like, we have a lot of great minds here, a lot of great talent here, and I think everybody doing their job, you know, we've always preached that, but truly everybody doing their job is how we're successful. Like, you guys both doing your job, me doing my job,
yep,
Tommy Luce doing his job, you know, it all goes into play.
Everybody has a role. It all fits together really well. So backing up, you're a Newcastle native. Is that the only hometown you've ever had?
Yes.
How was life in Newcastle as a young Mason Gillis?
It was fun. Simple, small community. I think we were at like 18,000 people. So it was big enough to where you could get away from people. We had stoplights. We had gas stations. We had stuff like that. We weren't no stoplight town. But it was also small enough and very community oriented. Around sports, so that benefited me as well. You know, the community was small enough to almost be at every single high school basketball game, baseball, football, and we weren't always the best, but like the community treated us like it.
And home to the world's largest basketball gym.
That's right, yeah. World's largest field house. Yeah, but I mean, let's face it, Mason, Newcastle is a basketball town.
Absolutely.
I mean, it is basketball crazed, and for good reason. They've had a lot of really good players and teams over the years, Ray Pavey to Steve Alford to Mason Gillis. But so what is it like growing up in a town where basketball is the center of the entire town?
Yeah, exactly. I always tell people my favorite thing about the field house was sitting on the court pregame, shooting around, and watching the other team walking from the tunnel. You know, it's the first time kind of seeing another opponent get scared just by the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I don't really see that much now because most players are like used to where they've been and things like that. But back then, it was kind of cool to have that intimidation factor because we were used to it. We grew up in it, watched games in it. And so just having that environment really kind of elevates your game, really, because you think about the people that have came before you. You think about the community that's there to support you. And so it's not like you don't want to let them down, but you want to make them proud.
So a youth basketball player in Newcastle, I can only assume, Like, that is your dream, to play for the Newcastle Trojans, right? That is, I mean, that's the goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, growing up, I was baseball, basketball, football. And so I leaned a little bit more towards baseball just because I was good at it. I enjoyed it. But as I was going into high school, I was kind of starting the transition to just basketball. And so having that transition, as well as, like, the community support, the field house, and it was just, like, a perfect storm. And it helped out having fun with the winning. You know, we were yeah. we were pretty good. My first 2 years, I was young, played a decent amount. I started, but I wasn't at the level where I got to my junior year. And, you know,
started to happen for you. Was that one of your earliest childhood memories? Was sitting courtside in the field house? Like, do you, like, of all the sports memories? I think we all probably growing up have some kind of a early sports memory. Mm-hmm. Is that one of your earliest?
Definitely. Yeah, you know, the guys that I grew up with, that we played from really third and fourth grade all the way to high school, we were sitting together in our jerseys, and similar to IU, we had the green and white candy stripe pants instead of red and white. And so we all have our jerseys on, our green and white striped pants. And I remember watching, like, Zach Hahn, Jordan Hahn, Chase DeGaulle, who else was on those teams? Names I'm drawing a blank on. But, yes, I do remember sitting at the bottom right next to the tunnel, watching them run out, break the – there's always a kind of plastic run through.
Sure.
And being a little kid, watching them bust through that, through the tunnel, was always just like, right on, let's do this.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And our band has always been amazing. So, yes, we have a huge huge gym, but one of the sections was entirely filled with a band, and so, like, it was rocking the place every single night, and I hope that they still do. In my time that they did, I haven't been back to a game in a while, but pretty impressive stuff.
Our coach used to always, the second game of the season was always at Newcastle. They never returned it, so Mount Vernon would always go to Newcastle the second game of the year.
Gotcha.
And I know Coach Howe did that on purpose because he wanted us to go. First, he thought it was really cool. He had a lot of respect for Indiana high school basketball and just, you know, admiration for just everything that that kind of basketball community in this state, you know, embodies. And going over there, it was cool. It was a great experience. We very rarely won over there. I remember not getting too many whistles over there.
But you were like a guaranteed game for them.
Pretty much.
Other than they didn't pay you to come over and play it.
Yeah, we'd show up, and it was the second game, and it was always an eye-opener. It's kind of what you spoke to. You know, you come out of that tunnel, you're like, whoa, this is a little different.
Especially being, like, 16, 17. Like, now in college, like, you're 21, 22, you've been through some things.
Yeah.
But back then, you don't know any better.
Right,
you've just been playing AAU gyms.
And for the most part, that's probably your first exposure to that, the massive building, but then also that many people.
Right.
It is eye-opener. I can only imagine how many wins that's led to just based on the intimidation
for
factor.
For sure. It's just like here. You know, we talk about how they help us out.
Yeah.
So
you mentioned other sports, and but you were really good in baseball and that kind of thing. Basketball, you think just your affinity to the high school team, that kind of, is that the, one of the reasons it kind of won out, or just you enjoyed playing it more, or you were better at it, or what was?
Mm-hmm. Honestly, like, my baseball trainer at the time, whenever I was 16, he was kind of mid-level with the White Sox scout. And now, today, he's number one. He's head scout man. And so, like, he knows what he's talking about. He knows what he's doing. He's been around forever. And whenever I was training with him, he told me that if I kept working, that I could potentially get drafted at high school. That potential is pretty there. And so with him telling me that, but I wasn't getting recruited, really, by baseball coaches. And so, yes, of course, I believe him, but I couldn't go anywhere. You know what I mean? I couldn't call somebody up and say, like, yes, I want to come play for you. And
you just got to put your fate in the hands of somebody on draft day.
Exactly. And so, like, in my mind, I didn't want my mom to have to pay for school, and I was starting to get recruited by basketball. And so I was, like, kind of not necessarily weighing my options, but more so, like, kind of trying to listen how I felt. And I was just drawn to basketball, you know. Like, I wanted to wake up at 6 a.m. to go shoot in the field house. I wanted to shoot after practice. I wanted to eat dinner at 8 and go back to the gym. Like, I wasn't really thinking about baseball like that. And so that's what helped me transition. And my parents knew that, Mike Shirley is his name, that he had kind of told me that. And that those cards were on the table, kind of.
Yeah.
And so, like, they were pushing me, keep playing. Like, we can do both. We can make it work. And I was like, but, like, I don't want to make it work. Like, I'm missing out going to New York to play with my guys at an AAU basketball team whenever I'm here in the cold playing baseball. Yeah. Like, I want to go play basketball. And so, yeah. Like, over time, we were able to make the decision, obviously, to play basketball.
Do you, being with your physical nature, do you get tired of the people saying, oh, you should be playing football? Have you ever thought of playing football?
Yeah, it's funny because after one of our games, I forget which one it was, but a guy stopped me and asked me, and he was like, you really should? Do you have another year? I was like, yeah. And he was like, you'd be a great tight end. And then I was like, okay, like, I don't know, like, maybe. He was like, all right, I'm going to make some calls, see what I can do. I was like, all right, man, like, is what it is. But, yeah, I've definitely thought about it, like watching Travis Kelce.
Yeah. You know, like, well, that's the one position, too, where there's been a ton of basketball players, mm-hmm. Yeah. You know.
I think that, like, with my body and my, like, attitude towards sports and competition, I think I could. I'm not saying that, like, I'd be great at it right away. You know, obviously it's a different game, different way about going about things. But I think I could try it out and see how it worked. You know, I don't know if I want to beat up my body like that. Right, and that's kind of like why I stopped playing football in the first place. I saw the movie Concussion, and it just, I was like, I'm done. I'm
okay.
Like my brain. So.
Yeah.
When did you stop? Junior high?
Yeah.
Junior high.
My last year was eighth grade.
Okay. Yep.
Well, then you start going through high school, or as you're going through high school, then you got had a setback with an injury in high school. Mm-hmm. And that's something you've talked about a lot in the past. And talk to our listeners about kind of what the injury was and just from a mental standpoint, how tough it is to deal with that.
Yeah. From the mental side, it was really tough because, like we talked about, I was just really, really getting into basketball. And that was going to be my second year of AAU basketball. And I was on a really good team, Indiana League. We had a guy go to North Carolina, West Virginia. West Virginia is Miles McBride. He's in the NBA right now. We had a 7-footer. We had a 6'10 Croatian guy. We had all the pieces to be a great team, play really well that summer. And I get hurt on the first game of that summer. And it was a non-contact play. You know, I just kind of came down on a floater, a little wrong. And so, like, that was tough because in the summer you have all the events you get to go to. And, again, the coaches told me, like, play well. This is a possibility for you. Like, we're going to try and help you out to
get
here.
Yeah, you were gearing all up for it.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I was excited. And first game, I get hurt. And me being me, my mom being my mom, you know, we're trying to, like, fix it ourselves. Like, but I play the rest of the weekend, and it didn't get better. It didn't get better, like, a week later. And so we're like, okay, we need to go get this checked out. Because at that time, I was still kind of – I was moving on it too much, and it was swollen up a little bit. And so we went to the first doctor, MRI, and he just basically did a scope with my meniscus. And – I think it was like 3 or 4 weeks after that, still wasn't better. We'd gone through the rehab, we'd gone through the right due process, and it just wasn't better. And so whenever we got a second opinion, we talked to Mike Shirley. Mike Shirley is the guy I talked about earlier, and mm-hmm. he connected us with the Cincinnati Reds doctor. Mm. And so we drove down there. Got an MRI. We were there for probably like 5 or 6 hours because he expedited everything and knew that we were going to be traveling. So we're there one day, get all the scans. He comes back into the doctor's office. And he's like, he knew who I was because of the reference, but like he didn't really know what I was about to be doing really. He just knew that like there's a guy here.
Yeah.
He needs a surgery. But once we explained to him my situation, he was like, okay, well, there's two things we can do. Rehab, and you can be back for your senior year, play, and then after that, might have to have another surgery, might probably going to have problems. Or we have surgery, go through the rehab process. It's very long, but you'll be fine for Purdue and the rest of your time at Purdue and hopefully afterwards. And so I was like, oh man, that's tough. Because again, yeah. like I'm missing out on my senior year. Like yeah. I want to go through all of that and it is what it is. But my mom was crying a little bit and I just looked at her. I was like, one, it's not life or death. You know, a lot of other people are in a lot worse situations than just a knee surgery. And
very good perspective, by the way.
And two, you know, I'm ready for Purdue and the long run is the better decision, so that's what we made, you know.
And you played down the stretch your senior year, right? Or at the end?
No, I didn't.
Was that before?
I thought, yeah, I'm with Elliot. Did you get in a game, yeah. just the last game or something?
Yeah, so.
So when you were playing before, you were hurt. You were playing on it hurt.
Yeah, so that was in the summer.
I remember.
Like
okay.
June, July. And then once I had my second surgery, I was down for a very, very, very long time. I don't remember the, like, time periods of everything, but there was, like, a very, very strict regimen of increasing the range of motion of the locked out knee brace I had, very slowly being able to put weight on my foot, and like life with a locked out leg, it's not fun at all, and pain.
Well, especially for a guy who is as active as you
exactly.
are.
Yeah,
it's
yes,
gotta be exactly. going.
And it was
crazy.
The summer too, so
yeah.
like I'm in bed laying down all day, and the sun is up. My friends are running around, but it paid off. You know, my first 2 years here, like I had small problems with it, but that was expected, just because of surgery and coming back into basketball. But once I kind of got over that hump, I've been good. I haven't had any problems.
As you before you decided on Purdue being your spot, talk to us about the recruiting process and kind of who maybe kind of emerged when you kind of made your final list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I thought that the recruiting process was really cool. I never really got like overwhelmed with it because I wasn't like super highly recruited. I was recruited pretty well, I thought, but it was manageable. I know some people get stressed out about it and kind of worry about making a decision. But I knew I had a great supporting cast with my sister playing at Wisconsin, my dad going through it, my mom going through it with my sister, and then just all of kind of the sports family that I had. And between Butler, Xavier, Ohio State, and here, the thing that stood out with me was here was the people. And it's not like you guys did anything like special recruiting me. It was just, you recruited me the right way. I felt like Coach Payne did a great job of showing his interest. And I always tell people, like, whenever they ask me questions about why I came here or what stood out to me was Coach Payne driving 3 times during the season to watch me play. And it's a 2-hour drive. You know, he's probably getting back here at, I don't know, 1 o'clock, because he stayed after the game to talk to me. And that really stood out to me. Him taking the time out of his day during season, and I understand it even better now, going through season and how yeah. it is for him, and like seeing him go and recruit now, I'm like, damn, like he actually like did that for me, like awesome, like, and I'm glad that I felt that way back then, because it's not easy to be, and I think on that time you guys were on like an 18 win game streak or something like that. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And he had made a couple trips to come see me. So I was like, wow, like, that's really impressive. And then just the academics, like, those two things is what stood out to me. But with the mental side of, like, recruiting and I'm trying to figure out who wanted, like, it made it easy with my knee surgeries, kind of. I kind of had, like, another feeling of, oh man, I don't know if this guy's gonna get back with his knee surgery. Like, yeah, maybe he would have been okay after one knee surgery, but damn, he got 2 knee surgeries. And some of the other schools, I kind of felt that way. They leaned a little bit towards the other player, and they didn't do a very good job of hiding it, whether or not they wanted to or not. Like, I could feel it.
Right.
And I never felt like Coach Payne was like that. You know, he told me like, yeah, it's probably gonna be tough. We don't know if you're gonna be back to the same or. We just don't know, but we believe in you. And so that's what I really appreciated.
I do remember when we first started hearing about you as a player, there was a guy that told us and I don't know, I can't remember who it was, but somebody told Paint, they're like, hey, I got a guy down there that is totally your kind of guy. And when you hear that, and even if someone today were to call and say, I got the guy that's your kind of guy, in my head, I think of hard charging player, you know, that plays hard, that can fit what we do. And obviously you've done that, you know, to a T since you've been here. But that was the first thing that kind of caught his interest. And it was some, I forget who it was, but it was somebody he respected. And, you know, sometimes you get people, our phones light up a lot with people. Hey, I got a guy for you. I got a guy. Like, okay, well, send us some tape and we'll check it out.
Right.
But when it's somebody, you know, there's a handful of guys over the years that you get the trust and that coach really leans on. And when they say it, then it carries a lot of weight. And that was one of those situations. And then
I think I might know who you're talking about. So his name is Stephen Bennett. Yeah. I call him Coach Bennett.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Stephen Bennett.
There you go. Yeah. I know he was, yeah.
Long time he was assistant. My trainer in high school, and he, like...
He was your high school coach, right?
No. So he had retired.
He coached at Newcastle.
Yes, he did.
Oh, he retired.
He coached for a while. He retired, I think, when I was in, like, sixth grade, possibly.
Gotcha.
Fifth or sixth grade. But the great thing about that, like, I still talk to him to this day. Love him to death. And I still work with him whenever I go home. But he, like me going out and playing in AAU games was great exposure, but I think he was even more exposure because he had connections to Butler. He has slight connections to Xavier. He had connections to Ohio State, and he had connections up here. And so I think he did his job of reaching out and being like, hey, I got a guy.
Yeah.
And so I give him a lot of credit, really love him and appreciate him for that. But yeah, he told me that he was going to contact Butler, and he was going to wait to contact Purdue to see how like things kind of played out with, I forget what was going on at the time. But he had told me that he was going to contact you guys, and I was like, all right, right on.
Yeah.
But I didn't really like think anything of it because I hadn't really started getting recruited yet. But he told me, like, if you keep working, like, you can do it. Like, you have the potential and your work ethic, like, you can get there. And so him telling me that was huge because I, of course, wanted to play college basketball once I had transitioned from baseball. But again, I wasn't necessarily getting recruited like some other people. And so I was like, man, like, I don't really want to go play mid-major, but like, if yeah, I have to, sure. I will, you know what I mean?
Did you grow up with a favorite team?
Duke.
Okay.
Duke was my number one.
Yeah. Yes.
That's where I wanted to go forever. But I would never. I'm very happy with my decision. But yes, that was always the number one.
Yeah, sure. Everybody's got a team growing up.
Yeah.
You mentioned your. I guess I didn't realize both your parents were college athletes. Mm-hmm. Where did they play? What did they play?
So they both went to Ball State. My mom ran cross country, and my dad played basketball.
Huh. Yeah. How am I just now finding this out?
Do you remember when your sister went through the process? Like, was it like? Mm-hmm. Stressful time for her and mom, or do you remember that much?
Yeah, because my sister had never gone through it.
Yeah.
And she's not a worrier. My mom's not a worrier, but like they're teetering on being a worrier.
But when it's the first too, like absolutely. That's always tough.
Yes,
like
absolutely. But my sister was a beast, so she didn't really have to worry about like, am I going to get to go here? Like, she could have gone anywhere she wanted to. She's getting ready to play the year, number 7 coming out of high school, like number 7 nationally ranked out of high school. So like, she could have picked wherever she wanted to. And it was funny because yes, she went out to USC and transferred to Wisconsin. Actually probably shouldn't share this, so we can keep going.
Okay. Very good.
But she knew, like, it's different. There's different levels of anxiety. Like, there's absolutely. One, am I good enough? But there's also, like, am I going to the place I want, you know, that's mm-hmm. going to be the best for me?
Mm-hmm.
They had a lot of success at Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're one of the better programs in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And Rob's got a son at Madison. He can attest to the fact that it's a great college town in the Big Ten.
Yes.
So do you remember when you were going through things? Do you remember any bits of wisdom that she shared with you?
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't necessarily call it her wisdom because I feel like my wisdom and her wisdom comes from our parents and our coaches. You know, yeah. It's just like we've kind of been touched by so many people in our lives to where we have our own kind of thinking on what everybody's told us. And with that, I think her biggest thing, if I called her to ask her today, was finding the right people. Because growing up, she had always wanted to go to USC, and she finally met that goal, and she was like, I have to go to USC. But at the time, there was better options for her, better yeah. situations. But she was blinded by the fact that, like, I got to go to USC.
Yeah.
And so she went to USC, and it wasn't the right people. And so when she transferred to Wisconsin, she loved it because it was the right people. And so that was when she told me. She was like, yeah, the shoes are nice. Yeah, the gear is nice. Yeah, the facilities are nice, this, that, and the other. But you're not talking to a weight bar. You're not talking to a barbell. You're not talking to basketball hoop. You're yeah. talking to people. You're mm-hmm. like, who are you going to be interacting with?
That's a great way to put it, yeah.
How are they going to treat you when things are going great, when things are going bad? Do they respect you? Do you respect them? And so, like, my mom, my dad, and sister, I feel like that was the biggest thing they told me. And I'm not the smartest person in the world, but academics has always been very, like, prominent in our family. And my sister told me whenever I was getting recruited that she had talked to friends and everything, and that Purdue is pretty much an Ivy League school whenever you talked about the academics. And so, like, that stood out to me because after basketball, like, you gotta get a job. And so having that diploma and people understanding the power of the P, kind of was like, okay, like, this is just gonna set me up in all aspects because Purdue is really good. Coach Payne, obviously being Coach Payne. And then, yeah, so.
That's a very mature way to approach it, too. I want to go. I want to go back to something you just said, but first, I want to give a quick shout out to our friends over at the This Is Purdue podcast. This is Purdue's the official podcast of Purdue University, and it features in-depth and behind-the-scenes stories from your favorite Boilermaker athletes and coaches like Coach Painter and Katie Geralds. This is Purdue on your favorite podcast app, or subscribe on YouTube to hear more about these special Boilermakers. Good friends of ours over there at the This Is Purdue podcast, and we like to give them a shout out every time we tape on our end. Okay, so back to something that it made me think. You said you're not the smartest guy in the world. I would say you're selling yourself short. You have been, in my experience, and I've been here over 20 years, arguably maybe our most organized player we've ever had. In terms of, and I don't know what you guys do day to day. I'm not in your lives like that. But you are one of the few guys that is constantly hitting me up about, hey, what's this look like in February? What's this look like in June? Or you seem to be a guy that maps out your calendar, which I think is awesome because I live.
That is your job.
I live in a calendar, yes, basically. So, like, unfortunately, I know what days of the week are years in advance. But I feel like you're pretty organized in that regard. Mm-hmm. And I also feel like you're very forward-thinking. You're one of the few guys, not few, I guess, you're one of the early guys in the day and age of NIL mm-hmm. that's really taken advantage of this opportunity you guys have been given. And I think been very well thought out, and you've planned things, and you've been aggressive with things. Is that a fair assumption on my part? Am I reading too much into it? Or are you?
Yeah, I would say for both the organized and the NIL, yeah. And I think that kind of, like, whenever you say that, I think of Nigel Hayes. My sister was at Wisconsin at okay. the same time. That, yeah, like, yeah. I don't want to say he was causing a ruckus, but, like, he was bringing attention that players need to get paid. Mm-hmm. He was bringing that to light. And me having a sister go there, obviously I'm kind of a little bit more in tune with what Wisconsin is doing compared to other schools. And so seeing that and kind of just from a bird's eye view, like not having any weight in it on at all, I was like, man, like if I ever get the chance and they change that, how could I miss out on that whenever he's mad that, you know what I mean? So like mm-hmm. it's like kind of in my head, I prepared myself for something that I never thought could happen, but I believed it should happen. And so
I think a lot of us thought it should, you know,
yeah.
I always thought it was weird when we would have guys come back to campus that were a year just graduated, then they would come back that fall and the bookstore would have them come over and, you know, sign autographs for $500 and promote it, and yet the current guys couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And I used to think, like, boy, that what, like, what are we doing? And yeah. then as that drum started to kind of beat louder and louder, I think it was one of those things where I think very few would argue that that's not something you guys should be able to
absolutely.
Do. So
yeah.
it's, but then, you know, you've, you have come through college as a student athlete in such a unique time. I mean, you guys had to deal with COVID. You guys get to deal with a portal. You guys get to deal with NIL. It's been a lot. And, like, people always talk about the coaches, like, oh, man, how do you guys handle this? Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm not one of those guys that thinks you should ever feel sorry for coaches. But nobody really talks about how the players handle all that stuff. But it's been a lot that you guys have had mm-hmm. to deal with since you've been on campus.
No doubt. And, like, kind of back to the calendar with all of the stuff that's, like, happened, I feel like I don't do well with calendars. Like, I've tried to figure it out on my phone. I've tried to have a pen and paper and write it down. But I just have a list, honestly, like, of important dates and then just kind of, like, reminders on my computer. So, like, all of my classwork, I kind of week by week go through, write down dates, write down stuff I need to, like, kind of start early to be still on track. And then with basketball and, like, NIL stuff, I do the same thing.
You've got a system then.
I have my own system that works for me.
Yeah.
And so, like, I have an academic list, calendar list.
Yeah.
And I have, like, a sport NIL list, calendar list. And not to say it's perfect. Like, I miss stuff every once in a while. But I think, for the most part, it's worked out for me. And it keeps my mind simple whenever I just write something down. Like, that's why I text you sometimes, because somebody will text me, and I'll be like, I'm not for sure yet. Let me figure out. And so, like, I'll write down that they text me, and I'll write down that I asked you, just so I know whenever I go back 2 days later, I'm like, did I do that?
Right.
Okay, I did do that.
Well, so you're one of the guys, when you're scheduled to do something, I don't have any reservations that you're going to be on time and locked in. There's other guys I've dealt with over the years. Maybe a few follow-ups are required to make sure they get to where they need to get, but you are not in that category at all. To the NIL stuff, so when this first started, do you remember the first thing you did that you got compensated NIL-wise?
I think one of the first, it might not be the first thing I did, but one of the first posts, you guys know what Manscaped is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I got a razor from Manscaped. Yeah. And I literally just, like, posted a picture of the box and, like, me holding one of the razors or something.
Wow.
But, yeah, I've always kind of, like, thought that was a funny start.
So I think a free razor, or did they pay you as well, or just a free razor?
Oh, man, I don't remember. I don't know. They might have just sent me product for a post or something.
Gotcha.
We haven't really talked about this. We did a podcast a couple years ago just about the whole new NIL world, and we kind of talked in generalities. But I don't know if I've ever asked a student athlete some of the details of NIL stuff. So the first year you go through it, and I don't know how well we've done our job of educating you guys. I feel like we've tried to do our part of letting you know kind of what all this entails, but was there any nervousness about, like, because we've harped on, and I think if there's one thing we've tried to almost scare you guys with is, like, look, man, you got to pay taxes at the end of the year, because you could just Google tax problems and celebrities, and you over the years you see people get in trouble with the IRS for not paying taxes on things. Was that at all intimidating?
Absolutely. And it was, I would probably say, a little less intimidating for me because I had been exposed to, like, finances, excuse me, and kind of on my own. Like, I started investing my sophomore, junior year of high school.
Yeah, you told me about that.
Yeah, and so, like, I just have always kind of, like, I just enjoy that type of stuff. Like, I think that if you're not in the stock market, like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? You don't have to be, like, huge in the stock market, but, like, something for when you get older. And so I've kind of always had that, like, long-term thought process, like, with my knee surgery, with stocks. And so I, in my head, I've kind of just used NIL, for, like, fun things. But I've put a ton of money into my investment account with it. And so that's how I've gone about it. And with the taxes, I wouldn't say I was, like, very nervous because I set up a system for myself that, like, whenever, and, like, I didn't create this, I didn't come up with this myself. I just found it on YouTube, and somebody talked about how, I think it's, like, it's broken up to where right when you get a paycheck, you can either put, like, 50% of it away and forget about it, or 40% is kind of a little bit more, not risky, but like less conservative. And so I just, like, if I get a check, I split it in half, put it away, and then the other portion I get to do whatever I want with. And so the 50% portion of the 100%, I usually put like 30% of it into my investment, and so then I have that 20% to do whatever I want with it. And so that's like helped me not have to like, okay, like I need to have this, 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 and this to be able to pay this.
Yeah, in 8 months. That's awesome.
Yeah, so it kind of, I found it and I was like, it works. So like I'm basically covering my ass. Like,
yeah.
At the end of the day.
That's really, and then like another really
nervous
smart
thing that, I don't know if a lot of people talk about it or not, but like being in front of a camera, being able to like read a piece of paper and look at the camera and say it, it's a lot harder than people
right
think.
Right.
And so like there's some videos probably on my Instagram where you can see me kind of like looking to the side and then at the camera, because I had my girlfriend holding up a note card.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like it may not look the best, but like it was just trial and error, really, because I had never done influencing or
that's a
product cool advertisement.
Yeah.
So just getting started, like you just kind of got to figure it out, like what works, what do you like to do, what's kind of like a headache to do, you know what I mean? And so through the 2-3 years, I've kind of just taking my time with it, really. Like there's been times where like, wow, this is a little bit too much, I need to slow down a little bit, or like, okay, like I got some time here, I got a little free time in the next like month or so, I can schedule some things and like kind of put a little bit more time in that area.
And how do you think we've done, meaning Purdue and not just basketball but our athletic department, things like that, and mm-hmm please be honest, like if we haven't, you know, how do you think we've done in terms of equipping you guys to deal with NIL?
I think we've done as good as you guys have done as good as you could have done, because it's more so like on the player if they want to do more or they want to do less.
Right, yeah.
Like Brandon Newman, he didn't really want to do that much. Trey Kaufman, he doesn't really want to do that much, and that's totally okay. And then like myself, like I like money. I want to make some money so I can put it in my investment and buy new shoes.
I was going to say, what's your one splurge? Shoes.
Yeah, right? Definitely shoes. Definitely shoes and clothes. And then I like to take moms out for dinner every once in a while, so she likes that. But to the fact of like what you guys have done, I really appreciate it. Like early on, you guys didn't like jump at everything. I think that was smart to kind of see the land play out and like watch other people kind of mess up. You know what I mean?
Those was the Wild West in those early
days. Absolutely. Like, and like nobody really knew what to do. Like when people contacted me, I was like, we can do whatever you want. There's not really many restrictions on it. Like, and I'm telling people that, and they're like, are you sure? Like, this is like, and so I'm like, yeah, like it's Wild Wild West, like you said. But we had a lot of meetings. Like we had people come in and talk to us about the taxes, not flooding our accounts with ads, having our personal life and like personal feeling and connection to the followers on our social media rather than just ad.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's hard to kind of balance that, but it helps. Like if you don't ever think about it, if you never told that, you really don't think about it, because
right branding, like how do you brand yourself? Like that's never that wasn't even a thing when we were
there are no college classes on branding. No.
Exactly.
Kind of learn it as you go.
And
another thing here, like we don't necessarily talk about money. Like it's not like we're not worried about it. It's not like we have all the money in the world. It's not like we're broke, but like we're good, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think that helps also. Like the topic of conversations in the locker room is not like, oh, I'm about to go get this deal, or I'm about to we'll talk about like, yeah, that was like cool, like how'd you get that, or something along those lines. But it's more so just kind of like a fun thing to do, and then the money comes along with it. And we're setting, like, again, Purdue has set us up in so many ways, like the players to be successful after, multitude of ways, but NIL is also another way. And so you guys helping us kind of learn about taxes, learn about everything that we do affects other people, and people look at it a certain way, depending on whether or not their opinion matters.
Right.
It's there. Yeah. Like, if we post something with a certain caption compared to something else with a certain caption, there's two different opinions about that.
Absolutely.
No matter who you're talking to.
Well, I think that all gets back to when you talk about how you guys discuss things in the locker room. I think that goes back to Coach Painter getting the right guys in the locker room.
Exactly.
And getting guys that have, you know, a similar set of goals. And it's always been, you know, us versus me or I. And collectively, you know, we all know that we're a lot stronger than we are individually. And I think that mindset kind of permeates our locker room.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. And a lot of people say they do it and talk about it.
Right.
But it's a lot harder to walk the walk and talk the talk.
Well, I want to ask you, because I don't know, I've grown a whole new admiration for you as a young man, as a player, just how you've approached this season. And it's probably been talked about a little bit. I don't read as much media coverage as I used to read.
You're not missing anything.
Thank you for confirming that, because that was my sense. But I, you know, you're a guy that started last year. You're in a different role this year. I can't think of a guy that's dominating his role more than you. And I got to tell you, I admire you so much, because we say the phrase happy warrior a lot around here. And it started with Coach Katie. He used to always say it. And it's that's really what it means, dominate your role, whatever that is. And I don't know if there's been a guy that's epitomized that in one season as you have this season. Like, it's been simply amazing in my estimation. You show up every day, you go to work, you put your hard hat on. There's very rarely a morning when I'll ask the GAs, hey, anybody come in and shoot? Yeah, I got Mace. It's almost got to the point where, like, okay, who other than Mace? It's not like you're a given. And that's been all summer, fall. It's just, you're a guy that shows up and works every day. You have energy every day. There's days that you give me energy and the staff energy. We may show up to practice, and Mace is the first one in that film room, you know, and he's the first one. What's up, everybody? How we doing? Like, okay, here we go. We're ready to go. And some days we need that, because the season's long and it's a grind. And you've just killed it, my man. So I want to tell you that, because I think you've done gone above and beyond the call when it comes to your role this year. How's it been on your end? And the change that you've kind of embraced?
It's been, like, weird to me,
yeah.
Honestly.
And not that it has to be...
Yeah.
Not that you have to enjoy every minute of
exactly.
it. I get that, yeah.
But it's also, like, kind of cool at the same time. Because with my basketball career, I've had so many, like, ups and downs and lefts and rights. And just kind of, like, man upstairs giving me something else to figure out. You know what I mean? And with this... Coach Payne told me early on in my career here at college, do the work and I promise you it'll pay off. And so, like, I've just kind of tried to, like, keep that in my head along with, like, day by day. Each day is different. If we get to wake up and come to this facility, and I forget that sometimes, that we're in such a great place, I have great facilities. Some days are better than others. And I know you guys noticed that, but I try my best to give energy, to be a good teammate, the happy warrior mentality. And the biggest thing is just day by day. And then with that, like, not starting and kind of playing a little bit less, some games, this, that, and the other, it has been weird, but at the same time, it's just another challenge. And it's my choice whether or not I want to be a good teammate and dominate my role whenever I get in there, dominate my opportunity whenever I get in there, or pout 24/7, not be happy, bring down the energy, bring down the team, and just, like, I don't want to be that type of person. Yes, like, there's back and forth between the
sure,
two types
absolutely.
Of persons, because
yeah.
not everything is sunshine and roses, but I try to do my best to stay over here, and whenever I do, like, find myself over here and then I get back over here and then something good happens, it's like, okay, it's like re-solidifying that being over here is okay, and we're not always going to win. I'm not always going to score 20 or get 10 rebounds or this, that, and the other. But if I can make somebody feel good that day and, like, trying to help somebody that day. And that's one of the cool things that, like, in my career and my process through growing up here, I was a young guy at one point, and I had older guys telling me, this is what we do, this is how we do it. And now I'm the older guy telling the younger guys, this is what we do, this is how we do it. And so, like, days where I'm not, like, damn, like, I really don't feel like being here. Damn, I really don't doing this, that, and the other. Like, I go and try and talk to Miles a little bit extra. I go and try and talk to Zach a little extra. Like, guys that I can converse with and teach some things to. Because I don't know everything, but I know some things. Like, being here 5 years, I'd be surprised and sad if I didn't know a lot of things about our program. And, like, Cam. So, like, in a roundabout way, I try and lean on them without them really, like, knowing that I'm leaning on them. And that's just how, like, who I kind of am. Very vocal, like, outspoken. Like, I need to talk. Like, whatever it is, especially in the basketball, like, on the basketball court, like, I feel like everything needs to be said. Because if it's not said, then they have the excuse of, like, oh, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I just told you. Now you can't say that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's funny you bring that up. I was going to say, do you ever find yourself as, like, the elder statesman in the locker room? Like,
absolutely.
When a young guy is worrying or freaking out about something, and you kind of sit back and go, ah, like, that is nothing, my man. Like, you're worrying about that, but it's nothing. Because, like, we'll catch ourselves up here sometimes, whether it's with the GAs or the young guys on staff. You know, if there's a holy cow, and you're like, hey, man, like, we're good. Like,
we'll deal. The follow-up there, Mason, would be, when you were a young guy, who was that? Or maybe there were more than one. Who was that guy for you?
Yeah, so there was a lot, honestly. And the Paint Mondays, Ethan and I were talking about this. We were asked, like, who we looked up to as a young guy. And initially, you know, I said Eric Hunter, Sasha Stefanovic, and Aaron Wheeler. But, like, even – I wouldn't say even more so, but just with them, P.J. Thompson and Grady Eifert.
Oh, sure.
P.J. and Grady were there through my redshirt years, mine and Brandon Newman's redshirt years the entire time. Every single day, you know, waking up in the morning, working out, going to practice, shooting a little after practice, watching film after practice. And then on road games, we would at home, if we were at home, we would play 2-on-2 that day for like a while, you know, just because, yeah, we were redshirting, but we could still play. And it was fun. Like, we enjoyed just having the competition.
Yep.
And even on road games, whenever the team had warmed up, we warmed up with the team, and the team went back into the locker room, we would stay out there and play 2-on-2.
Yeah.
And, you know, it, like, 2-on-2 isn't necessarily a huge developmental thing, but it was more so the mental aspect and the mindset of, like, PJ and Grady. Like, the way that they looked at the game just playing 2-on-2 against us, we were faster and stronger than them, but they had kind of the shit talk. They had the little swagger. They knew how to play together. They knew that if I was leaning one way, Grady's going to slip to the rim that way.
That old man wisdom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it's like, man, damn, they're kicking our ass every single time. But it wasn't like they were expending a lot of energy. They just knew how to play the game. And so, like, that was kind of always cool to me. I was like, I got to get to that point. Like, I really want to understand and, like, see the game, how they see it, and simplify it. And I don't know if I'm there all the way, but I'm working towards it. And obviously, with the coaches that we have, it's helped me. And PJ still being here, it's helped me. But that was one thing that's always stuck out to me. Just the way that they understood the game and, like, played it the right way.
Yeah.
It was always cool to me. So.
Well, keep doing your thing as we come down the home stretch here. You're doing an incredible job, and we're rolling along and looking for a lot more fun down the stretch here. So. We end our podcast every week with a final four questions. These are kind of non-basketball related questions, so we'll start our final four here on episode 97 with Mason Gillis. The first question here on the final four, what is your go-to music of choice? Favorite artist or favorite genre of music?
Oh, man. I say my top two artists would be right now, probably Future and J. Cole. That's kind of like who I'm listening to a lot right now. And then rap and R&B would be my genres.
Okay, there we go. I think Morty said Drake.
Yeah, probably. I can see that.
Yeah, so that seems to be what I hear most in the locker room. Although you guys don't play a lot of music in the locker room.
Yeah, I think it's because we come and go a lot. and I don't know.
I think too. I think this locker room talks more than most locker rooms.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like you guys are always in conversation, which I think is actually cool. There's been locker rooms in the past where like if there's music playing, there's not a lot of talking going on.
Yeah.
Question two here on the Final Four: what is your favorite all-time book, or maybe a good book you've read recently?
Mind Gym. I forget the author, but my mom made me read it a long time ago when I was in high school, and it definitely changed my perspective on like going about competition and like working out.
Really?
Yeah.
So like the mental side of workout?
Yeah, not necessarily just like working out, but like the mental side of competition and understanding that you can control your mind. Like the outside factors aren't controlling your mind, you're controlling your mind.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's cool.
And that's not word for word in the book, but that's kind of like what I took from it. And it's a great read. I forget the author, but it's like a shorter book, smaller book, but it's very impactful.
So wow, that's
Mind
awesome.
Mind Gym.
Very cool.
G-Y-M.
Yeah. G-Y, or not Mind
Gem.
Not like Mind Rob or Jim, the name.
Yeah, or like a precious gem.
Yeah.
There you go.
Stone.
Gem, yes. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay, question three here on the Final Four. If you could wave a wand and do any profession starting tomorrow other than professional basketball, what would it be?
I'd love to be an artist.
Really?
Yeah, like a music artist, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I love music for one, and I don't necessarily have like the mind's eye for music, because some people really do. Like Justin Bieber, I don't know if you guys saw a video, but like he sits down, thinks of some music in his head, and he has a smaller symphony in front of him, and he directs them and creates a beautiful song just like that. And so I think that would be like awesome to have, to be able to either sit down and not even necessarily know how to play a piano, but you understand the music and how it flows and just like the beats and rhythm, really.
Yeah.
And just sit down and be able to play. I think that would be awesome to have.
So you would probably enjoy the creative side of it more than the performance side, or both?
Yeah, like just how I respect like people working out, and I love working out, but I also love the competition.
Yeah.
So it'd be a little bit of both. Like I love the creation and everything, but of course I love the big lights.
Yeah. I was gonna say I could see you going to that club and performing and have it bumping in there. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And you didn't hesitate with that. Sometimes,
no,
a lot of times we got some hesitation, people thinking about, that's pretty cool.
I just think in like everything that comes with it, like being able to travel, being able to see new things, meet new people, meet a different type of people, that's kind of like where my mind is, my mindset. Like I want to travel, I want to go out and see things. So,
Do you watch many music documentaries? Like if there's a behind the scenes on a performer, do you watch those a lot?
Yeah, so like the movies I feel like that have came out in the past like 3 or 4 years, like the Beatles movie, I forget, the Prince movie, Star is Born.
Yeah.
I see that movie
three
times in theater. To my girlfriend at the time, and then I went back to my mom twice, so...
those are all the.
But yeah, I enjoy that type of stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that stuff. I'm always watching stuff on YouTube and stuff. I find it fascinating where creativity comes from, and I think that's awesome. Okay, last question here on the Final Four: what is a little known fact or something no one knows about Mason Gillis?
I knew how to longboard, and I learned it in COVID.
Really?
I knew that. And a little bit attached with that. I have an astronaut riding a skateboard tattooed on my stomach.
What was the decision behind that? So the skateboard, I assume, is because you learned the longboard, and the astronaut is.
I don't know. For some reason, my mom has always thought I really liked astronauts, and so it's always just been kind of like a thing. It's never really like I wanted to be an astronaut, or like. I thought that they were really cool, or watched a bunch of videos on it. I really don't know where it came from, but my mom got me a sweatshirt with an astronaut like dunking a basketball, and so like I don't know, it was just kind of cool, and I wanted to get a tattoo. I was with a friend, he was getting a tattoo, and so I was like, might as well. Like,
why not?
And the skateboard, the longboarding, is I wouldn't necessarily like sentimental to me, but like it holds a little bit of value and like thought. Process, but like during COVID, you know, it was a weird time. You had no idea like what was going on.
You're not really with something to do where you could be outside.
Yeah, you're not really with your family. You're not like whatever it is. But Eric and I were together 24/7, And so, you know, we were over here at Fuse, and then we got moved to the apartments, and we were going crazy. We didn't know what. We were going crazy. And so we
felt so bad for you guys.
Yeah.
Who was the first that had to go over? Because
I think Aaron or Isaiah.
Because they go, right. So they were, well, they had to go get quarantined across campus.
No. Okay.
And they used these old married student housing apartments, which are now getting demolished.
Not even there, yeah. Right, right.
And the first time they went in, I mean, I felt like, I hate to say it, but I felt like someone was in county jail. Like they were like,
yes.
I was getting these texts like, Bloom, the Wi-Fi's not working. The food they're dropping off is awful. And I just, my heart sank. I'm like, oh my God,
yeah.
These poor dudes. And so then like Chad, our Young, our trainer and I, we would take shifts like dropping food off.
Mm-hmm. And so
somebody said like, well, how you, some of the other sports were saying, well, how are you getting your guys food? Like, how do you turn the receipts in? Chad and I are like, we're just going and buying it for them. Like, yeah. What do we care? Like, these dudes are like, we got to help
we're
them, man.
We're struggling over here.
We got to help them. I'm not worried about getting reimbursed. I'm trying to get them something to eat. Yeah. Oh, it's crazy.
But along with that, the reason that, like, it's kind of cool to me is because we learned how to longboard during that time when we went over the apartments.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a longboard, but we had some friends on the soccer team, and they had brought us some food, and they had brought their longboards. Because they knew we were going crazy, so they were like, here,
yeah.
Try this.
Oh.
And they knew we didn't know how to skate. So we're out there looking crazy, both Eric and I, like, just trying to figure it out. And, like, eventually we figured it out together after a lot of falls and scraping each other, scraping our arms and legs up, falling. We learned, and we were able to ride. And so, like, that's kind of, like, cool to me, I guess.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah.
Now, do us a favor. Just wait, and then in mid-April, pick yes. that back.
Oh, yeah. I know. Trust me. Because I have hurt myself on them before. I don't get on them in season. I might take a small stroll around the block, but nothing serious in season.
Well, Mace, I want to thank you for taking time to join us. Again, much respect for everything you've done for us, and excited to finish your journey down the home stretch here.
Yep. Gotta go get a natty.
There we go. All right, that's episode 97 here on the podcast. Mason Gillis, our guest. I want to thank him. Thank everybody else for listening. I want to remind everybody, until next time, be curious, be informed, and be well.
Mike Lisby. Good night, everyone.